and welcome to another exciting episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles. I am your sick host, Tim D-O-double-G.
We're not clapping because he's sick.
Wait a minute, how do you mean like sick? Like, oh man, that's sick.
Oh man, you have the bad germ sick. But hopefully I'll get it out of my system by the weekend so I can celebrate Free Comic Book Day Saturday. Everyone go to Dirt's Comic Book Shop.
Yay!
And also to introduce my co-host, Dirt, a.k.a. PCN underscore Dirt on Twitter.
Make sure to check out.
Is it a Flash hat?
Yeah.
Nice.
It's actually embroidered, so it looks like it's all sketched in.
Ooh.
Is that one of your C2E2 gems?
It is.
Make sure to check his website out, popculturenetwork.com.
Now that we finally worked out our server issues for 2.5 days, it's like if you went to popculturenetwork.com, it worked. But if you went to www.popculturenetwork.com, it didn't work.
Okay.
So then we tried to fix it. And then www.popculturenetwork.com worked, but popculturenetwork.com didn't work.
Yeah, that's all sorts of weird.
it's all GoDaddy. It's stupid GoDaddy.
At some point tonight, theclicknation.com may be down from 10 p.m. Eastern till sometime for Bluehost server maintenance. So hopefully you're watching on the YouTube link and not the website.
Oh, yeah.
And also joining us tonight is Agent underscore 70 on Twitter.
What's up, everybody?
And last but not least, he's not here tonight, but excuse me. is our co-host Roddy Cat. That's at Roddy Cat on Twitter. His news Twitter account that you can follow to keep up with all the latest breaking news is at News Nerds Need. And, of course, our Twitter account is at TheClickNation, and I'm at TimDOGG98. Make sure to go to the website, TheClickNation.com, to find previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles and Comic Book Reviews. Like the Facebook fan page, Facebook.com/TheClickNation. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, YouTube.com/TheClickNation. Subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher Radio, just search for TheClickNation.
There's the mute button. All right.
I have what they call the itchy, scratchy throat. So the more I talk, the more my throat is itching me. So this should be a fun episode.
Oh, sure. You can take a break.
Circle us on Google Plus. Search for The Click Nation. Use the hashtag Comic Book Chronicles, and you may get your tweets read on the air. And let me cut this off. Any email you want to send that to theclicknation@gmail.com.
Yay, you made it.
Barely. Luckily, I've got my green tea here.
There you go.
Ah. So, this is where I turn it over to Dirt to let us know how his C2E2 weekend was.
Oh, nothing happened. You keep talking.
No. Struggling over here.
All right. So basically, for the first couple of years at C2E2, nobody else was there. So we used to go to all the panels, try to cover all the news, tweet out everything that was happening, whatever. And then the last couple of years, C2E2 has gotten so big. It's like IGN is there. Comic Book Resources is there. Comic Vine is there. Bleeding Cool is there. So it's like if we go to the panels and we're, taking notes and whatever, we're just telling the same thing you can find anywhere on any other, website. So we decided that this year what we were going to do different is try to get some interviews. And luckily we got an email from DC saying, hey, DC is not going to have a booth at C2E2 this year, but if you want interviews, here are all the people that we are going to have available if you'd like to sign up for some. And I learned a very important lesson this year. And that is, when we got the list of all the names of the people who were going to be available at the show, we said, well, you know, we don't want to overstay our welcome. We don't want to overdo it, you know. So we picked out four or five names of people that, you know, we really wanted to talk to, we thought would be interesting, and we sent in the list. And apparently what happens every year at every show is schedules get bumped. And, you know, people agree to do extra signings at the booth, or the panel that they're in goes too long, or they need a half hour in the bathroom because of something they ate at lunch on the train, or something happens. And so schedules get bumped and things get all messed around. And so what we should have done, and I found this out from a couple other websites, is that what you do is you just say, sign me up for everybody. Because if they sign you up for all 20 people, you know, you're going to drop out on five of them because of scheduling, and then you're going to get a bunch of interviews. You know, we said, you know, we'll take this handful of people, and then we didn't get to talk to Greg Pak. We didn't get to talk to Scott Snyder, you know, just because
too much.
Yeah. And so we should have just, you know, shotgun. Whoa.
Whoops, forgot to mute my mic.
So anyway, we did get some good interviews. That actually turned out really well. We got to talk to Charles Soule.
Which was
pretty good. A couple things that he talked about, which I thought was interesting, is that because he writes so many different books, he actually has color-coded notebooks for each title he does. So when he's doing Red Lanterns, he's got a red notebook. When he's doing a Swamp Thing, he's got a dark green. When he's doing She-Hulk, he's got a light green.
Nice.
And it kind of visually, you know, when he sees it, it puts him in the right frame of mind of what he's writing for. And he talked about some of the different stuff where he starts with the big idea. Like, what's the big arc? What's, you know, the overall big story? And he kind of writes it down, and then he goes to the next one and figures out what's the big story and writes it down. And while he's doing this, his mind is still kind of stuck on the last one that he's working on. So it's kind of in his mind. So then when he comes back to it, he has a pretty good idea of how it's going to break down by issue. And he writes it all down. And then he goes to the next one, how it's broken down by issue. And he said by doing it this way and switching, by the time he gets to the point where it's down to write an issue, it pretty much writes itself. And he just kind of gets in that zone. He just kind of sits and types, and the whole thing just kind of comes out on its own. And so I thought that was kind of an interesting idea, that he, you know, by the time he gets to that point, it's pretty much all, you know, finished in his mind. So that was pretty cool. We talked to Dan Juergens and Brian Azzarello.
Nice.
About Future's End. And I guess Future's End came to them from up top. This came straight from Dan DiDio. And he called Brian Azzarello at like 6:30 on a Saturday morning because he had this idea. And he wanted to get it to Brian, and they just sat there and worked out a bunch of it. And the whole point of Future's End and the 5 years, you know, jumping ahead 5 years in the future and all of that, is that when they worked out what is 5 years in the future, the 5 years in the future that they worked out is not Elseworlds. It's not a what if. Like, when they worked out 5 years in the future, that is 5 years in the future. It has weight. It's solid. It means something, which I thought was actually, you know, it's nice to know that, you know, they're actually putting some thought and some weight into it, as opposed to it just being, well, it could happen. You know, I mean, this is 5 years. There's clues for other stuff that's coming in between now and then. So I thought that was pretty cool. We talked to the Aw Yeah Comics guys, Franco and Baltazar. They're coming back with the Tiny Titans Return to the Treehouse miniseries.
Nice.
And I learned two main things. One is that if you ask Baltazar a question, he will literally go for 5 minutes until you tell him to stop.
Wow.
Like, he will give you the answer, and then he'll kind of throw on a joke, and then he'll kind of build on that joke, and then he'll kind of go back to the answer, and then he'll throw out another joke, and then Franco would tell a joke, and then he'll tell a joke, and then they kind of go back to it. And if you don't stop them, like, if you don't go on to the next question, they will just keep going forever, which, you know, it's kind of fun. But the other thing is that Balthazar's style is so original. You know, he draws everything in these cute little characters, but all the lines are different colors. You know, so I knew it had to be something digital the way he's doing it, but I couldn't quite figure out. He uses Manga Studio, which is the software. Yeah, it's like, I think there's a cheap version you can usually buy for like $30. And then there's like the $100 Pro Studio. Right. Yeah. He used to draw everything by hand, and then he was at, you know, wherever, like at a con or whatever, and got a copy of the software and tried it out. And he's like, oh, this is great. And now he just does everything on the computer in Manga Studio software. So that's the first person I ever heard of that actually uses it professionally. But that just goes to show you that, you know, you can do it that way. Let's see. We also talked to Michael Allen Nelson, who wrote 28 Days Later. He's writing Damon for Boom. He did Supergirl for a while. And that's a guy that we took him down to the press room. We didn't do it through DC, actually. We did this through Boom. We took him down to the press room, and he was just, you know, he goes, I've got to catch a plane at, you know, whatever time. So you guys got me until then. And so we did a little bit of editing in the interview, but the interview we ended up with is 30 minutes on camera. Nice. Wow. Yeah, because he's willing to, you know, you ask any question and he'll answer it. And he's pretty fearless about the answers he wants to give. And he actually, even though he went to Supergirl and he was working on Supergirl and they actually took him off to bring in a different writer because they weren't exactly happy with what he was doing, he explains what he wanted to do, what they wanted to do, and ultimately why it's their decision. And he agrees with them that, you know, he wasn't the right person for that book at that time. And he goes, you know, everybody, there are a lot of people that will give DC editorial a hard time. And he goes, but not me. You know, people don't understand what they're actually trying to do there. And so many people pull characters one way and the overall story has them going a different way. You know, if people aren't able to play along with that, then yeah, you don't belong there. And so it was kind of funny that the one guy we didn't talk to through DC actually stood up and defended the DC editorial while all these other people, you know, have been attacking him and whatever. So, but yeah, that's a great interview. I had a lot of fun on that one. I feel like I'm forgetting another one. But you know, it was just one of those things that now that we've kind of gone through this stuff and we kind of figured out some of the stuff and how it works behind the scenes and, right. You know, talk to the guys at Comic Vine a little bit about how they do it and whatever. Now we've got a much better idea of how it works, and I think it'll go a lot better next year. But it's nice to have your original material coming out of the con. Like, we don't have the same news coming off the panels that everybody else does. We got some real original stuff, and so that was, you know, pretty enjoyable. You know, going forward on a lot of this stuff, it seems like a lot of the guys, like Brian Azzarello, when you first see him, you think that he hates you because he sits like this and he looks at you over his glasses and he doesn't really smile and he just kind of stares around. And then you ask him, you know, the right question as a joke and he'll just start bust up laughing and he's the nicest guy. But those first, you know, 30 seconds you're sitting there talking to him, you're like, this guy hates my guts and I don't know why, you know, but it's just, I guess you got to break that ice and get to it. The other thing was the press room that DC had this green wall behind it, this like a hunter green, like forest green type wall. And I was like, well, this is a nice backdrop. Like, this is, you know, this, you know, beautiful color. So we put the guys in chairs in front of that wall and we filmed the interviews. And I came home and that stupid green wall was freaking out our color balance the entire time. It either
bring myself to really laugh at that. I'm like, oh, that sucks.
It either washed everything to make it look really green itself, or it tried to overcompensate and it turned everything like orange. So I had to go in with like color mixing controls because on one camera it was kind of at an angle, so it got a little bit of the wall. And then we had a second camera going straight on that had the full wall. And it's like I kept trying to adjust, trying to get the colors to match between the two because one of them looked pretty good and the other one just was terrible. So I just kept trying to balance it and adjust the settings and whatever. So that's another thing I learned is find a good neutral wall. It's not as exciting, but it's much better for the camera. So, but anyway, saw a lot of great costumes, a lot of cosplayers there, hoping to interview some of them next year as well. And it was a packed show. I believe they said there were 63,000 who attended, which is a very good number, considering that this is a show that's only a couple years old,
Anecdotally, did it seem like it was better attended this year more so than last year?
Yeah, it did. And here's the other thing is that it was also bigger.
Okay.
Like they switched to the other side of the building. And so it was a much bigger space. The first year they were in the back of a second building, and then the next year they moved to the bigger building, but in the smaller side. This year they moved to the bigger, the big show area, and it was huge. It was a huge, massive amount of floor space. And one thing that C2E2 always did in the past was they were known for having these super wide aisles in between all the rows, and this year they actually condensed them down, so it was a bigger spot. Things were closer together, and especially on Saturday, because Saturday is always the heavy day, it was wall-to-wall people.
Wow.
It was massive. I'd say the show was definitely a success there, and definitely had a lot of fun, and looking forward to going back.
That's great. I'm glad to hear that show is doing well.
Yeah.
I think the Repop people are, they've learned so much from, the first couple of New York cons. And, they've used that to develop C2E2, and, they're continuing to improve.
Well, Wizard World St. Louis was about 3 or 4 weeks at the beginning of the month, beginning of April.
Right.
And then, of course, there's Wizard World Chicago that will happen, like, in August. And people kept commenting about how Wizard World is always, hey, we're having this actor and this actor and this actor and this actor. C2E2 was, hey, we're having this actor and this actor and this writer and this penciler and this inker and this brand new company is going to debut. It's like Wizard World has become much more of an entertainment show with people selling comics and collectibles on the side.
Oh, absolutely. I remember when Sheamus was still in charge, it became a wrestling show.
Yeah.
More so than a comic and even entertainment show.
And I love wrestling, so I'm okay, with the basic idea. And there were a lot of wrestling people there. In fact, at one point, we came up from doing an interview, and I was walking, and they have kind of like this red carpet area where they have this big backdrop, C2E2, Chicago, Repop. It's kind of cosplayers go get their picture taken and, whatever.
Sure.
And I'm walking by, and I just feel this hand on my shoulder going, hey, could you take my picture? And someone hands me their phone, and I turn and look, and it's Tara from TNA Wrestling, Victoria from WWE. And I was just like, oh, okay, sure, click. I used to watch you on TV. This is totally weird. Here's your phone back. Thanks. I don't know if the atmosphere is like that at San Diego Comic-Con, where it's so big. Anybody walks out, they're instantly getting swamped. I don't know if maybe Chicago is just a different crowd or because it's not as big, but it's
probably in the middle, right? I was about to say, it's probably in that happy medium. New York is probably moving closer towards the San Diego end.
Right.
I think there's plenty of famous people that just roam the floors, and because it's so crowded, you can't tell.
Right.
There's someone famous walking next to you. I think C2E2 is probably right at that happy medium.
And people San Diego was just very polite, very polite, very helpful. And cosplay people, I have to give a shout out to the people in costumes because, one, there were a lot of people in very elaborate costumes, and people always gave them the space they needed to move around. Sure. There was a guy dressed as a Spawn demon with these giant wings coming out, and people would give him the 10 feet he needed to move through the area, and the cosplay people, they would take pictures with every single person. They smiled every single time. They would do the pose with the little kids. We sat there in the balcony and we're watching them out on the show floor, just doing random footage of them and whatever. And you would just see them. They would try to get into the show. It would take them literally an hour and a half to get from the stairways coming up to the floor into the front door because they were being stopped every 6 inches by someone running a photograph, wanting to get their pose, and they were willing to do it. You know, that's what they're there for. So I give a lot of credit to the cosplayers for what they do for the fans.
Glad to hear. Any particular favorite costumes that you saw? Anything that you saw that was actually really common?
There were a lot of Batgirls this year.
Nice.
For some reason. And they were, most of them were actually really good.
Barbara Gordon, Batgirl?
Yeah. Well, the funny thing was, a lot, most of them were Barbara Gordon, but people have started to kind of mix the costumes together.
Right.
So this, the one I, one I remember in particular, had the Stephanie Brown mask, but she was wearing the Russian mafia daughter. I can't think of her name. Was wearing her outfit. The one
was the Russian mafia daughter, Batgirl. Oh, yeah. Wait. Where's the sound effect? Hold on. There we go.
But she had the all black suit with the outline of the Batgirl of the Bat logo. Yeah.
That's the one. Russian.
Yeah, like her dad was like Russian mafia or whatever.
Jean doesn't sound Russian.
Maybe she's adopted. But you know, she was wearing that, so it was like a mix. But then she had the Barbara Gordon red hair.
Mm.
So it was like she was a little bit of each one kind of mashed together. I thought that was a really good kind of fun way of tackling something like that. But there was a Booster Gold that had a Skeets attached to his shoulder that was on a clear little rod that was, you know, kind of wrapping with him. There was a Green Lantern guy that actually had a full double machine gun minigun thing coming off his shoulder that looked like a construct. That was really cool. There was actually a Professor X and Beast that came together, and they brought a wheelchair. So Professor X sat in the wheelchair and Beast was pushing him around through the entire show. There were a lot of
that before. I feel bad sometimes, you know, looking at that, like, really?
hey, for the Professor X, it's a great gig if you can get it, right? You just have to sit there. But there were a lot of Doctor Who's. There's always a lot of Doctor Who's. There were multiple Rogues. I mean, there was just a lot of stuff. One of the coolest ones, though, was there was a Space Ghost Coast to Coast.
And I say
Coast to Coast, not just regular Space Ghost, but he's Coast to Coast because he actually had a desk attached to his waist. And the little view screen that the celebrity would come on was attached to it. And it was just an empty hole. So you could actually walk up and put your face in the little celebrity view screen and have your picture taken with Space Ghost sitting there at the desk right there. So he had a whole kind of diorama set in his costume. So that was really cool, too.
Did you see a lot of Winter Soldiers?
There were a couple.
Okay. Pegged that as you know, like I foresee at New York Comic Con that being a really popular costume.
Well, one of the things was they sold a collectible hoodie at the C2E2 booth of Winter Soldier. So it had the hood, it had the bionic arm with the star on the side, you know, all of that. So a lot of guys that just had long dark hair would buy that hoodie, zip it up, and suddenly they're Winter Soldier, you know. There was a guy in a Bumblebee outfit from the movie. He was actually on stilts. He had lights running through the entire costume. And he had a voice box hooked up with a speaker in the mouth. So he would talk on the inside and the voice would come out from up top. That was actually pretty cool. There was a Grim Reaper that was like 7.5 feet tall. He was on stilts walking around. There was Caster and Jim from Tron Legacy, and they had the lights wired all the way through their suit as they were walking around the floor. There were some really elaborate, you know, people that actually obviously spent, you know, months getting their costume together. And some of them go from show to show.
Yeah.
That's one of the things they absolutely do. They have time off. They travel. You know, they'll drive 8 hours, you know, to get to a show and be there on Saturday and drive 8 hours home. You know, that's what they do.
So. That's awesome.
Yeah. So we're going to be putting together, we've got some of the videos. I just uploaded them tonight. Later on, you can go to popculturenetwork.com and check them out. Or if you go to my YouTube page, they're on there right now. But then we'll be editing over the next couple of days, a lot of that cosplay footage together, making a, you know, music video, 10 or 15 minute clips of all the stuff we saw on the show floor. So look forward to that.
Nice. Looking forward to that.
popculturenetwork.com. Stay tuned.
We'll make sure to retweet out those links. Make sure you tweet those.
Oh, yeah. They'll be going out later tonight.
Nice.
All right. Now to quickly go through some of the news that was announced at C2E2. Let's see. Marvel's going to kill Wolverine in the Death of Wolverine 4-issue weekly series from Charles Soule and Steve McNiven. I found it interesting that they chose not to let Paul Cornell write this. Had to give it to a bigger name.
I don't even know if it's a bigger name so much as, I don't know if Saul's really that much of a bigger name.
I guess they liked his pitch idea for it. Supposedly, that's what I read.
Here's, this is what I heard mumble on the floor of C2E2. Yeah, possible spoiler. If you remember in Age of Ultron, there was the scene where Wolverine and Invisible Woman, they're talking to the Wolverine from the past, and Wolverine's like, only one of us can still exist, so he takes the other Wolverine and they go into the cave and then he emerges later.
Right.
And he, you know, killed the other Wolverine. What people were rumbling, and, you know, put whatever validity in this you want to, people were rumbling that the wrong Wolverine came out of that cave. And that the wrong Wolverine is the one who's currently in the present, who is more vicious, was willing to kill a guy to be undercover, ended up losing his powers, and is now going to die. And that other Wolverine wasn't actually dead. He was left for dead. You thought he might be dead, but he's slowly coming back, and somehow he's going to wake up, reemerge from the cave, and then ta-da, Wolverine is still alive and okay.
Oh, okay.
Hmm.
Now, like I said, put whatever stock in that you want to. I don't know how valid that is. So he's just been
taking a long nap.
Exactly. But it's time travel. Couldn't he come back to the future before?
Did he left in the present? Did he left in the past or the present? I can't remember. The killing took place in the past, right?
I think so, right? Yeah.
I think so.
I can't remember.
I think so.
I don't remember why he had to kill the other Wolverine.
Can't have two of them, even though there's like two Cyclopses and two Icemen running around.
Right, exactly.
But they're in different time periods, though, right?
Who wants to?
Yeah, okay. All right,
I ain't taking a snap at that.
Yeah. So, too much thinking.
Yeah, I'm just like, what? Who? What?
Age of Ultron, let it go.
Yeah, seriously.
Let's see. Disney announces plans for new novel set in Star Wars Episode 7 continuity. So the what they call it, the expanded universe, is not going to exist, and they're going to forge their own new territory.
That's all I got to say about that.
Angered a lot of people because they liked that expanded universe. But, I mean, you kind of knew it was going to happen, you know.
I mean, the stories can still matter to you. You get new stories. New outcomes. Comixology removes storefront from iPad and iPhones.
We know what this is all about, right?
Amazon hasn't officially taken over the company yet, but they're getting it ready for Amazon.
Right.
And the last thing Amazon wants is to give Apple money.
Correct.
So this cuts Apple out of the loop. Comixology is often the number one revenue generator. Right. Yeah. So this is going to cut a huge chunk out of Apple's storefront.
Suck it, Apple!
And possibly more money to the creators.
Suck it, Apple!
Yeah, well, this allows them to play with pricing because Apple always wanted prices set at certain price points and you couldn't deviate from that. Now that they're no longer tied into that, it's very possible that Amazon is going to allow them to do whatever. If you want to do $225, do $225. You know, it doesn't have to be $299, whatever. The other thing is that with Amazon Prime, people aren't quite sure how Prime is going to tie into this. But Prime has always been the way that Amazon gives people stuff for free to get them hooked. You know, basically, right. You'll get the first episode of a TV show, or if there's seven seasons, you get the first season for free, and then right. if you want, you can watch the others. So there's also
always shipping on like other stuff. So
yeah, free. Yeah, so the idea is if with something like Comixology, it might be that you're going to see a lot more of free digital copies from publishers in there, where you get a free, you know, digital with everyone, or a lot more of buy this issue today, we'll give you the trade of the first arc or whatever, in the hopes that you'll like it so much you'll want to pick up the other digital trades to go along with it, you know, that kind of stuff.
Interesting. Interesting.
So in a way, a lot of people complaining about losing that Apple storefront, but in the long run, I think it's actually going to work out better having Amazon as part of the whole market.
Yeah. Like I was, when I originally read it, I was kind of mad, just like the majority of people. But then once I read the articles and saw how everything was supposed to work, I said, okay,
I can do it. And luckily, I don't use an iPad. I've got real tablets, so I don't have to worry about that.
Hey.
Hey, I'm no fan of Apple, so.
Let's see. So, so Nuss revealed that C2E2 was Marvel's original sin plans for Angela.
That's all I have to say about that. And
hit the spoiler. So it's going to be revealed during the Loki and Thor crossover, the 10th realm, during Original Sin, that Angela is their long-lost sister from the 10th realm.
Really?
Why are you sighing at this?
Really?
I like this.
I mean, it's I thought it was a creative way to incorporate her. I'm just not a fan of Angela. So I'm just like, really, they're going to stick her into, you know, Asgardian lore now? So.
Well, yeah, you remember that ancient Viking legend about the half-naked chick from outer space?
That's right. Fighting the demons and all that stuff. That's right.
Right.
You know, I mean, if she, you know, if they made her a Valkyrie, then maybe, you know what I mean? Like, if that's the point.
Maybe the 10th realm is nothing but women, the women realm.
That book will sell a lot of copies.
excuse me. So I'm looking forward to that. Like Agent 70 said, creative way of bringing her into the Marvel Universe, and they get to create their own new realm to explore. Let's see, I'm going to skip that story. Let's see, Marvel also announced a new ongoing series for Star-Lord, the legendary Star-Lord from Sam Humphries and Paco Medina, who I will miss on Nova.
I mean, I'm happy to see that they're actually utilizing Kitty Pryde a little bit.
Yeah, she'll be a guest star as they have a long distance relationship through intergalactic telephone. And he'll be on Earth during some points in the comic too, so he'll be back and forth from space to Earth. And so that'll make three ongoing comics in the Guardians of the Galaxy family of books, Guardians of the Galaxy, Rocket Raccoon, and Legendary Star-Lord.
One thing I did manage to snag from C2E2 is they had the Watcher eyeballs from Original Sin. So I did grab a couple of those.
Where is it?
Sitting over there.
Oh, it's too far?
Yeah, I can't quite reach it. They're all like racquetball sized, super bouncy balls that glow in the dark that have the Watcher eye on the front and the Original Sin logo on the back.
Is it creepy looking?
Not really.
Okay,
like,
good.
It's not cartoony looking. Yeah.
Well, if it's not creepy looking, I don't want it. let's see. There was a Marvel Netspit thing panel where they announced that Greg Pak would be writing a Storm ongoing series, and they had a teaser at the end for something called Axis, which will tie into Avengers and X-Men somehow, coming in the fall of 2014. My theory is this all ties into what Rick Remender is doing in Uncanny Avengers.
Right, which is kind of Avengers
and X-Men related.
Right, it's all kind of wacky right now, but it's good.
Warner Brothers details plans for a Justice League movie. Some people are speculating that it's going to be shot back-to-back with the Batman versus Superman and then follow up with Justice League.
Right.
DC has 9 comics, DC comic films in active development at Warner Brothers.
Right. What's funny about all these DC announcements, they all came from the Wall Street Journal, which I was like, yeah, this is a prime source for comic book related news.
Well, actually, it makes sense in a lot of ways because of the investing.
Sure.
You know, if you're going to try to get the word out, because everyone's going to go, well, Avengers was huge, Captain America's huge, Winter Soldier, you know, whatever, then where's your stuff? And they're going like, okay, you know, we're working on it, and here's some deals, and try to keep the stock price, you know, from going down a little bit. They're like, no, don't worry. We got a lot of stuff in the works, and that's going to help keep people, wanting to keep that stock and keep the price up.
All right.
We lost him.
Nope.
No.
Let's see. Marvel confirmed what everyone already should have known, and that's the Marvel Netflix shows will be part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Star Wars Episode 7 cast was announced.
That was actually pretty cool. You guys saw that cast photo, right? That reading photo that they posted.
And people are already cyber protesting.
Oh, stupid people.
Have you heard why?
Well, there's not enough women.
There's not enough women. That's right.
Because women are the big thing now.
Well, it's like in all the Star Wars universe, you've got Padme and you've got Princess Leia, and that's really it.
Right.
Yeah, that is pretty lame. Lucas doesn't like women.
Neither does Disney.
Yeah, that's all. They're all one family now.
Yep.
I didn't even see Harrison Ford in that picture.
Oh no, he's easy to spot. He's the one I spotted right away, right next to J.J. Abrams.
Yeah, he's in there.
I didn't see J.J. Abrams. I don't know what he looks like. Need cue cards.
Google
actually,
is our friend.
Did that. I think IGN did that. IGN did a actor map where they had little lines coming out with the name of the actor next to each one, so you could find everybody on there. And the producers and the writers and whoever.
Well, I mean, the easy ones were Mark Hamill, Peter Mayhew, once I figured out where Harrison Ford was, it was easy to figure out Carrie Fisher, you know.
Mark Hamill is so creepy to me in a way because he looks like a little kid, just super wrinkly.
Yeah.
Like it's really weird how his look, he looks exactly the same, just wrinkled.
Mm-hmm. All righty.
The Image Comics Humble
Bundle. A lot of news this week, man.
I told you, a lot of news. Image Comics Humble Bundle is on sale, which is a nice, pretty nice offering.
Although you gotta think a lot of these books by now are several years old, and if you've wanted them, you probably already have them. And a lot of them have been given away for free in the past, so.
Like free Comic Book Day offerings?
Yeah, well, and like Comixology last year, the year before, at all the shows, you walk up to their booth and they give you a little business card that had a code for a free Walking Dead trade paperback volume 1. Saga, they were giving away a couple months ago for, I don't know if it was just contests or what, but it's like a lot of these, you know, I mean, it's cool if you haven't read any of them and you want to jump on board, you can get them pretty cheap. But yeah, not really groundbreaking.
All right.
And so Sony is stupid. Spider-Man producers say Peter Parker is the only Spider-Man we will see in movies.
No.
Which, no. They have time for that, for this to change.
I think what they're trying to, what they're trying to convey is that they think it's too confusing for the general audience to have Spider-Man 29, Ultimate Spider-Man, all these other different versions of Spider-Man popping in and out. Because, I mean, if you look at the cartoons, you know, the cartoons are always Peter Parker. Right, right now, there's an Ultimate Spider-Man series. It's Peter Parker. It's not Miles Morales. And right, there's no plans for it to be Miles Morales. You know, they're just trying to, you know, all these, because especially with the new series coming out from Marvel, that's supposedly every version of Spider-Man that ever existed, except, of course, for Superior, all being in this one gigantic series. They're trying to say, no, we're just going to focus on Peter Parker. That's all we're doing. We're not going to show alternate timelines and alternate universes and far off future and Spider-Man of 2020 and, you know, all of that. We're not doing 1602. You know, we're just going to stick with Peter Parker Spider-Man. That's what we're doing.
Right. There's a related announcement we don't have posted here. I think I read something along the lines of they started teasing the villain-centric movies that Sony wants to spin out of. I mean, this is old news for us, but some more solid news has come out, I believe, that of the villain-centric movies that Sony wants to spin out of the Spider-Man franchise. So, you know, that stuff is developing as we speak. You know, specifically, obviously, the Sinister Six stuff. And, you know, it's kind of a risky move because audiences may not be so receptive to see, you know, the hero, the labeled hero of the story actually be a villain. But, you know, attitudes change. You know, people are more, you know, open-minded. So we'll see.
Okay. So, yeah, more news. Excuse me, Roddy Cat got an email saying that G.I. Joe has been canceled.
That sucks.
Yeah, I'm checking right now. I'm at the Diamond retailer site trying to see if I can find any information on this. June 12th. Yeah, I don't see. Let me check here. Yeah, there is no G.I. Joe 16 in the database anymore.
It's gone. Maybe it's getting replaced by that G.I. Joe Transformers crossover.
Oh, that's. Well, that's.
I still remember the original one, and that was pretty bad.
Yeah, no, this new crossover is terrible. Like, when that Free Comic Book Day comes out. You just wait for the Twitter hate because it is becoming fast and furious.
Wow.
Let's see. Jim Starlin, Marvel reunion may be cut short over Adam Warlock hold. Basically, he was writing some story and he wanted to use Adam Warlock, but at the last minute he was told he's off limits now. Rumor is that Rick Remender has plans for him in his Uncanny Avengers book.
No kidding. Is that the rumor?
Well, that's what the Bleeding Cool rumor.
Wow.
Over the Infinity Watch, which isn't an actual watch like I thought it was, but a team name.
That's funny.
And they were throwing out a theory that the Infinity Watch is actually the future Guardians of the Galaxy that we saw in that Guardians of the Galaxy backup.
Hmm. Interesting.
Disney Infinity 2.0 edition with Marvel superheroes coming this fall, whatever that is. I think it's a video game or something. Sci-fi adapted Miller's Ronin.
That's
Souls, cool. Letter 44, Hickman's Pets, Romana, Shulu's Clone, and more.
That's pretty cool.
And last but not least, Grantland had a nice article up about article defending Cyclops.
Yeah, so. No, Grantland. If you know, for the viewers at home who may not be so sports oriented, right there, Grantland is published by Bill Simmons, who's the, you know, whose handle is the sports guy. He's an ESPN writer, and basically they do a lot of pop culture stuff. And one of the writers seems to be fairly well versed in comic book history and characters, Alex Papademos, and he's written a couple of comic centric pieces recently, and one was a critique of the character, the Gambit character. Which I was actually inclined to agree with for the most part. And this week had a very, very well-written piece regarding Cyclops and sort of the undeserved hatred that he gets from, comic book readers. And, you know, it was really well done. You know, I made sure to tweet that out right away. And, I'm glad to see that people are receiving it and reading it and, you know, thinking hard about, you know, maybe Cyclops not so bad. Oh, maybe he is.
I'm looking on some of the news on G.I. Joe here. It's the 50th anniversary. They ended Special Missions. They're ending regular G.I. Joe. They're going to relaunch. They're doing a big relaunch in the fall.
For the anniversary, huh?
Yeah, for the 50th anniversary. So that's what that is. Okay. And it looks like it may possibly even be a reboot. It's still kind of sketchy right now, but it looks like it may even possibly be a reboot starting over from the beginning for the 50th anniversary. So there you go.
So an hour of news, and now to finally review some of the books this week. What you've all been waiting for.
It's all right.
Who wants to start? Do we want to start with Amazing Spider-Man number one?
Impressive.
Yeah. I need a nap.
So, the issue was all right. It was oversized.
It was all right.
I enjoyed it.
It was oversized. We got the joking, wisecracking Peter Parker Spider-Man back. The art by Humberto Ramos was excellent.
Yes, I agree.
It was tying up a lot of loose ends and stuff that, you know, from the end of Superior Spider-Man and setting up more things. There wasn't any. I thought there was going to be like one big reveal at the end, like Superior Spider-Man had, because I believe Dan Slott had teased that, but alas, nothing happened. Well, there something happened. Well, wasn't
there? Oh, yeah, I was going to tell you, there's definitely a cliffhanger involved.
It wasn't that big a deal to me.
You know, we have to see what happens here. That's all. And I thought there was a lot of really great small moments for some of the characters. Let me tell you, like, I really appreciated some of the lines, like, you know, what Spider-Woman says. Yeah, that's him. He's back. Because that wouldn't happen to anybody else but him. You know, the part about his, spoiler alert, basically losing his costume, you know, except for his mask. So, you know, I thought some of those lines were pretty good.
And there was a ton of backup stories featuring Electro, Black Cat, how Spider-Man's powers work, and some more.
Right. The Black Cat one was actually pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, the Electro one is there, obviously, to help set up the movies, though.
And he's going to be the villain in the next couple of issues, along with Black Cat.
Right, right, right.
I thought he was in California taking on the Punisher.
No, he's already been shut down, I guess, because now he's back in New York. Back in prison. Oh, no, not in prison. Spoiler alert.
There's something in prison.
He's humble. Let's put it that way.
The Iron Sheik humble you.
Cool. That's something you don't want in a mainstream comic.
No.
Let's see. Anyone else want to bring up a book?
All right. How about we do a couple books? I read a lot of stuff this week. Let me throw out a couple of books that we had to read together. New Avengers 17 actually says on the front page that you have to read Avengers 28 first. So I'm just going to talk about Avengers 28 and New Avengers 17 together. I tweet, you know, Tim, you tweeted out that you really enjoyed the Avengers books this week, and I thought that they seemed to have kind of a pep in their step this week.
Yes, the Hickman mumbo jumbo finally is leading somewhere.
Right. And, you know, it's, you know, there's a lot of developed, you know, plot movement in these two books, and that really helped, you know, the reading experience. I thought that the that Avengers 28 just for a second was mildly confusing, and then you got it. And that's what's fun. You know, it's always tough when the Hickman mumbo jumbo is so hard to decipher that you really don't figure out until almost the very, very end. Whereas here, you know, there's a small mystery, you know, it kind of leads you down this path, and then you figure it out, and then the story goes forward. That makes it a lot easier and more, much more fun and reader-friendly. So, you know, I can appreciate that. And like I said, New Avengers 17 basically requires you to have read Avengers 28, and I understand that, you know, the two books are really going to be intertwined more so now than ever, as you know, as Hickman, you know, really develops this the long form story that he's been telling regarding the incursions. So, you know, fans of the Avengers, you know, like myself, fans of the, you know, of the storyline so far, you know, it's starting to pick up. So, you know, this is becoming you know, a much more of a must read every month.
I like that Hickman used Tony and Bruce Banner as sort of a long way. He used them as tools for exposition.
Right.
This is why all this stuff has happened for the past 25 issues.
Exactly. So, you know, they basically explain the mumbo jumbo. You know, so that was pretty cool. I like those two books. Those are, you know, we're talking about, you know, a combined candidate for Click of the Week for me.
Okay. Let's see. So what about, I don't even know if I want Dirt to discuss Flash Annual number 3. I see Swerved Again as your note. Can you discuss it without spoiling it?
I read it. If you want to bounce a couple of ideas, I did read it. I didn't have a chance to add it to my list.
Okay. Well, I guess the easiest thing to talk about is that the story is taking place in two time periods at the same time. You've got a Flash, like 25 years in the future, whatever it is, and then you've got Flash in the current day. Forever Evil is over, even though the final issue hasn't come out yet. The rest of the DC is marching on.
Yeah, don't get me started on Batman and Bane.
Oh, we can talk about that next.
Oh, Lord.
Please do, while I find some cough drops.
But it taking place in the two different time periods, this book is the introduction of Wally West to the new 52 DC universe. And there's, gosh, I don't even know. Like, I don't know how much more I can say without giving away the swerves here.
I guess that's all you can say, if that's all.
Wally West is the nephew of Iris.
Right.
Okay, I got a question. Was the swerve enjoyable for you, or were you meh to it?
I wasn't sure how to feel about it.
It's one of those things where DC never specifically stated that one thing or another was going to happen, but because of all of the hype around this particular issue, you assumed that something was going to happen. Like, everything pointed to the fact that something in this issue was going to be revealed, and then, in fact, you find out that that's not exactly what happens. That's not actually what happens. I thought that if take away all the hype, take away all this is the introduction of Wally West, take away that it's Flash in the future, and just kind of look at this from a straight storyline standpoint of of these two flashes and the story going on at the same time, I did enjoy it a lot the same way I go back and read some of the Silver Age Flash stories, some of the Carmine Infantino stuff. I think that's what they were trying to channel, some of that sci-fi vibe and that time travel stuff and confrontation with Gorilla Grodd and all of that stuff thrown in there. So I enjoyed the issue. Like, when I got done with it, I was like, no, that was, you know, a good story. But you have a certain expectation because of how they hyped this book of what you're going to find in this issue. And as it turns out, that's not what you get out of this book. And that's all I can say.
True enough. True enough. I'm inclined to agree. I actually didn't mind the issue. I wasn't privy to the hype. You know, I wasn't, you know, maybe I haven't been as in touch with what people were expecting out of this issue. So I kind of came in with a clear mind and you know, no preconceived notions of as to what it was going to be. So I read it. I didn't mind some of the developments. But like I said, I'm not 100% sure how to feel about it because I don't know what I was supposed to think. You know, I remember, you know, I always joke about going back to pre-crisis DC. So, you know, all this stuff is, forget changing what happened in the 2000s. You know, we're changing, you know, this is way beyond that.
Well, and it's not even, I can't, I'm trying to talk about it without talking about it.
Right. You know? Right. So let's stop.
I'll say this. Who Wally West turns out to be is not a problem for anybody other than the fact that they expected Wally West Flash to be a bigger character.
Right.
And that's the one thing that the hype kind of brings down, is because you go in thinking, again, Wally West is going to be here, and instead he's over here.
Right.
And that's kind of disappointing. But if you remove that aspect of it, and like I said, just go to what the base story is, it is enjoyable.
I'm inclined to agree.
Okay. All right. Can we both then agree that Batman versus Bane was a big pile of who cares?
Oh, I didn't read it. So go on. Oh. Go on. I wanted to avoid that like the plague because
I thought you said you did read it.
No. But I the only reason, well, the whole point of me avoiding it is because, look, I kind of want to see how Forever Evil plays out as much as I don't like it.
Oh, this really has nothing to do with the ending of Forever Evil.
Oh, really?
It's just Gotham City, and everybody is coming out of their homes because Forever Evil is over.
Okay.
And Bane is the one who is in control of Gotham. You know, he basically took over during the whole Arkham War miniseries, and Batman reappears to take Gotham back.
And it's so a big steaming pile of stuff.
It's not terrible. Like, I'm not going to say, like, this is the worst thing I read all week, because really isn't.
Okay.
It's not terrible, but it's Batman shows up, and he fights Bane, and they punch and kick each other, and they jump out a window, and they punch and kick each other, and they pick up stuff, and they hit each other with it, and they throw a bunch of stuff at each other, and they punch each other, and they kick each other, and they punch each other, and they kick each other, and they punch, and they punch, and they punch, and they punch, and then Bane falls over.
Wow, that's a professionally written comic book right there.
And
seriously.
I mean, that's...
Who's the creative team on it?
It's Peter Tomasi and Scott Eaton. So, again, like, it's not like they assassinated a character. Like, they brought something out of left field. And, like, Bane is actually a three-legged hermaphrodite with daddy issues that you didn't know about. You know, it's not ruined in that sense. It's just kind of ruined in the sense that you read the story and it's just like, okay, so these two guys punched each other for 20 pages and now it's over. And like, that's it. That's literally the story.
DC stays losing.
Wah, wah.
All righty.
So like I said, it's not the worst thing in the world, but it's just a big pile of who cares.
Gotcha. All right, let's see. How about throw out?
I guess I can praise all new X-Men number 26.
Yeah, we both read that.
Because it wasn't a page full of pinups?
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
It's true enough. That is true enough. Yeah, no, there was actually like some good storytelling here.
We finally got a moment between old Scott and young Jean Grey.
Yeah, mine's out of the gutter, people.
You know, they sort of had been avoiding each other for a while, but they finally had a kind of a sit-down heart-to-heart. And that's really about the – oh, X-23 tried leaving the group because right, Cyclops is, the young Cyclops left, so her crush is gone.
Right. So now we've got, you know, shenanigans afoot.
And the future Brotherhood are about to be the villains.
Yep. Right there.
Not, I really enjoyed the issue, even though nothing really happened.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's the staple of a Bendis book.
Yeah, pretty much.
So
pretty much. And, pretty much.
But it wasn't 20 pages of dudes punching each other?
Nah.
I wouldn't say no to it. Art by Stuart Immonen helps a lot, too.
Yes, it's very good. His artwork on this is phenomenal. Some of the best stuff that he's done to date.
The only reason I read keep reading Avengers World is for Stefano Caselli's art.
Oh, and it is knock it out of the park good this week, this month.
I like the Manifold stuff. The other couple issues I've kind of been like, eh. And plus I can't stand AIM, who Nick Spencer keeps on using in his Avengers books.
Yeah, I mean, we'll agree to disagree on that. I rather like the fact that it re-energized AIM and made them a much more effective villain. You know,
I don't care about the beekeepers.
Nah.
And Southern Bastard number one from Image Comics and Jason, the Jasons, Latour and Aaron.
Okay.
It's about a former, I guess I think it was like a former, like high school football star. He goes back to his dad's property in Alabama, and he happens to go to like a bar and runs into one of his old classmates, and the guys like messed up with the wrong crowd, and it's basically sort of like a reminder of, you know, he's back home, and it's a reminder of all the stuff he, I guess, tried to leave behind. And something happened with his dad when he was a child. His dad looked like he might have been a policeman or something, or his dad got beat up and killed somehow.
Okay. I'm
not really sure. As someone that lives in the South, I was like, oh, okay, all this seems very familiar to me.
Yeah.
You know, like the very first page shows like a dog shitting on the side of the road.
Wow.
And he's all like just barking and excuse me. So I'll keep on reading it. It reminded me of a FX original series.
Like Justified?
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. It's an interesting vibe for a book. Okay. Let's see. Throw out. Let me do a couple of rapid fires here. Origin number 5. Another kind of addition to the Wolverine story. Does it add much? Not really. You know, it's only passingly. I think it's, you know, just it's got a very low level of importance, I think, unless they start, you know, weaving in, which they probably will start weaving in some of the characters they introduce here into the greater Wolverine story, you know, however long that's going to last, because they're going to kill him soon. So, you know, maybe they'll be part of his, you know, eventual return. That's a possibility, you know. Given the fact that, you know, it's not set in stone how they'll bring him back. Let's see if there's what else I can bring up. No one read Batman Eternal.
Not shit.
Number four. Okay, I won't talk too much about it. I am liking the fact that the story is moving along at a good pace. You know, the art is, you know, obviously it's hard to keep up a weekly schedule, you know, with one artist. So there is a rotating team. And, you know, you kind of have to adjust to the different art styles. But ultimately, it's the story that carries it. And, you know, like I said, it does seem like it's an alternate retelling of Batman The Long Halloween. You know, it seems very much like that because it does involve the Roman Carmine Falcone. Yeah, it's still pretty good though. I'm willing to keep reading it. So, you know, I give them a lot of credit for creating a story that keeps me coming back every week. And let me throw out one last book because I didn't get a chance to read it last week, which is Hacktivist number 4. Alyssa Milano, what's up? Holla. I wanted to say that this was actually a nice wrap to the story. Just very quickly, the story is about two hackers, basically, who create one creates an algorithm and the other helps to formulate a website that's very much like Facebook and Nodes and Twitter, all sort of wrapped up into one. And they use it to kind of do some social justice, social good by organizing uprisings around the world in countries that are oppressive. And the United States government, of course, is portrayed as wanting to co-opt this technology and use it for its own ends. But the two founders of this company decide to rebel and go rogue. And this story sort of wraps up the first part of their story. You know, it's a 4-part miniseries, and you definitely do need to read the first, I would say, 2 issues. You don't necessarily need to have read the 3rd issue so much because there's a lot happening in this issue, and they do kind of recap it very neatly. You know, I would recommend this story because it is somewhat thought-provoking, much like Captain America the Winter Soldier. It does involve some present-day issues, you know, such as privacy and, you know how much influence the internet has over our daily lives and how connected we all are and disconnected we are, even though we are connected by our phones and Bluetooth and the internet. So I give this, you know, for someone who's pretty much a superhero book reader, I would definitely give this book a recommendation to people who are looking for something else to read.
The non-superhero comic book of the week?
Yep. Certainly is for me.
Okay. Let's see. Anything else I need
for mention? Or at least for last week.
I think I talked about everything that's worth mentioning. Wolverine number 5 is the only other book I read, and it's kind of just
The new issue. I would say we got the new issue of Sugar Booger this week.
Oh!
So if you haven't read Sugar Booger,
you know I was dying to read that.
I know that's next on your list.
Of course.
That's right after Cave Woman Journey number 1.
Nice.
Say something so I can see that.
It's Cave Woman Journey number 1 from Amaral Press.
Ah.
So, there you go. I know you were dying for that one. So it's out now. You can go get that.
I must have it.
I'm sorry. You were talking about Wolverine?
Oh, I was just going to say that Geraldo Sandoval is the artist taking over for Ryan Stateman, and I saw someone trashing his art earlier, but I actually enjoy it.
I haven't read it.
I was the opposite. I flipped through this thing, and I was like, I don't know how anybody would want to read this.
His art reminds me a lot of Roger Cruz, too.
Oh, but Roger Cruz was a hack. He was a hack. He was actively aping. Do you remember? See, Dirt and I go back a little bit further in time, right? We're a little bit more vintage. So I remember when Roger Cruz first hit the scene, and he was aping Jim Lee, and then he aped Joe Madureira.
And then I got a lot of light, though. So
he sort of developed his own style. So I give him some credit for developing his own style somewhat. But he started in the business aping, you know, two of the more prominent styles. So
actually, here, wait, hold on one second. Here is, I'm gonna pull this up real quick. Flip my screen share over. I'll show you. This is Roger Cruz. This is his legacy on comics, and there you can see Joe Mad's artwork on this side, and here's Roger Cruz's artwork right next to it. Here we've got a panel from Savage Dragon, and here's Cruz right over here doing his guy. And then this tiny one, you can't really see that well, but I think that's a Joe Mad also down here, and then there's Cruz's right next to it. He was doing the whole, was it David Mack? You know, just taking panels. Greg Land does sometimes, just taking a panel and redrawing the exact same thing, just with their character.
But Greg Land keeps getting work.
Oh, Greg Land is awful. No, because Greg Land uses photo reference. That's the key difference.
So there you go. All right. So
let's see. A couple more real quickie reviews. Let's see what did I read. Because, like I said, for whatever reason, I was able to fit in a lot of reading this week. Let's see. I read Hulk number 2, which was good. I was actually mildly surprised that Bagley's art has remained tight. It seems very sharp, and the story seems to be moving along at a good pace. I did read Rye. I did read that. I did, and I was only mildly confused because I had never read the previous versions of Rye. I did like Clayton Crane's art. The story was just mildly confusing. So, you know, I can't say I would recommend this to someone who wanted to pick a new book up for the first time. That's my main problem with it.
In the old Valiant, Rye was kind of the future legacy of Bloodshot. Did they mention Bloodshot at all in this?
Nada.
Huh.
I mean, they might do it in the second issue.
Yeah, maybe.
But, you know, let me tell you, like I said, it's a tough thing for a number one issue to kind of be tough to pass to somebody and say, hey, try this.
I'm so far behind in my Valiant reading. I'm going to get to this probably like in 2 months. I won't try to read everything in order.
Right.
I can tell you, Solar and Magnus, those are the two from the two Valiant books coming from Dynamite, and go read those first issues of Grabia.
Did anybody read it?
I wasn't crazy about Solar.
I didn't read it. I got to get to that.
So far, I'm only on the Magnus Robot Fire Train.
I got to pull that up, that Solar book. You like that, right, Dirt?
Oh, yeah, I loved it.
Okay, I got to read that. I gotta read that.
Yeah, read Magnus. Solar, give it a try, see if you like it or not.
Okay.
It wasn't like Turok bad.
Okay. Very few books are Turok bad.
Well, I remember liking the first. Oh, wait, no, which. No, Eternal Warrior I liked at the beginning. I fell off that pretty quickly. Did anyone read Uncanny Avengers Annual Number 1?
No, but I heard it's good.
It's actually. It was actually a pretty interesting story. It involves Mojo. It was just a fun kind of done in one story because, like, you know, if anyone remembers those Mojo annuals from like the late 80s, early 90s, it was definitely reminiscent of that, you know, from the X books.
Right.
Isn't Mojo the monkey from Powerpuff Girls?
Yes, it is. Yeah. But this is also Mojo, the
Mojo villain. Jojo.
Exactly. He's the villain and the network programmer, you know, Mojo World, the Mojo Verse.
Right.
So, you know, there's a kind of a cool combination of the supernatural characters of the Marvel U coming together as the Avengers of the supernatural. You know, it's all a construct of Mojo and his TV programmers. The art in this was actually really, really good. Paul Renaud, who I've never heard of, does a pretty, you know, bang up job on this. And if you're just looking for some solid superhero artwork, you know, well laid out, well, you know, well plotted, you definitely want to pick up this book just as a nice example of comic book art. You know, just kind of classically good superhero art.
Click of the week time?
I think so, unless we've got some other books you guys want to talk about.
A boot? Actually, my click is one we haven't talked about yet, so I'll go ahead. Where'd it go? I had it right here. Here it is. Transformers, More Than Meets the Eye 28.
Ooh. That's a nice cover.
Yeah. So basically, a couple of weeks ago, I talked
about... You know what that reminds me of? It reminds me of that that X-Men cover where the X-Men are looking out. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Actually, this is a riff on the Justice League.
That's right.
Because there's Megatron down at the bottom saying, want to make something of it, just like Guy Gardner.
That's right. That's definitely it.
A couple of weeks ago, I was talking about the whole Dark Cybertron storyline that was going on between the books. I was really impressed by it. I enjoyed it quite a bit. And so I've decided to keep on with the Transformers universe. I didn't get a chance to talk about the last two books, but this is the third one out this month as part of the new season two of Transformers is basically what they're calling it. And basically in the Transformers universe, it has split into three different storylines. The first one is Optimus Prime, and he is on Cybertron. He's trying to get everybody, you know, rallied back together. The war is over. There's no more Autobots and Decepticons. It's all just Autobots, I guess. The revolution of the Decepticons is over, and they've made peace, and they're forging ahead in a new world. And that is in Transformers Robots in Disguise. Then you have another series about Windblade, who is a female character. Previously in Transformers lore, there are no male or female. They are just robots. And a character named RC, who was actually in the Transformers movie from 84, if you remember the animated one, they brought her in the comics, and she was experimented on and developed in order to create a type of female robot. And it was like an experiment gone wrong, and she ended up going crazy because of it and became an assassin and whatever. Well, when in this part of this whole ongoing Transformers saga, they've began to realize that over the course of the 4 million years or whatever that this war has been going on, certain groups left. They just didn't want to be part of the war. They didn't want to be part of the fighting. They just left. And they've kind of evolved their own way over the years. And this female is head of this female group. They're almost like Amazons. And suddenly you have these females, which, you know, if you think about it, transforming robots, they're not male, they're not female, they don't reproduce, they don't mate, you know, they're just these beings. It's not part of their DNA, it's not part of their characters and who they are. And suddenly you have this faction of females that appears out of nowhere. So suddenly it throws this wrench in everything, like, well, like, how does this work? This doesn't make any sense for us, because they don't have any way of developing how the structure works. It's not part of their society. So now in Transformers More Than Meets the Eye, Megatron, who was the former leader of the Decepticons, gave up. He surrendered. He became an Autobot. He threw himself at the mercy of the Autobots. He realized that all he ever wanted
was... It's over, Prime.
Well, he basically... The Autobots had been the rulers, more or less. Everything had to be structure and function. Everybody had a role. And they saw that as being fascist. And so they were actually fighting against what they saw as the fascist regime of the Autobots. And it really started as a revolution for freedom. And over the years, it just got corrupted. You know, it's the Hatfields and McCoys type thing, where over the years, they kind of forgot what they were fighting for. It's just, I'm trying to kill you, you're trying to kill me. And Megatron realizes, like, he has this, you know, moment of clarity where he realizes that he's lost the battle. Like, he's lost the war because he is this evil killer, you know? So this story, Megatron actually becomes the pilot of a ship called the Lost Light, and they are actually going out trying to find another group, another tribe of these robots that left 4 million years ago and developed on their own. And it's kind of like there's always been these secrets, these whispers about this other group out there, this other tribe, the Knights of Cybertron, and he is leading this expedition to find them. And so, again, I said this when I was talking about Dark Cybertron, and it still holds true even through these issues, that for a book based on a toy line from the 80s, you know, this cartoon that was a glorified commercial that everybody thinks of so fondly, that was just basically a way to get you to buy more toys, which led to this comic book series, they really tackle some neat ideas. They put a lot of really deep stuff into it. And the way they've redefined the Autobots and Decepticons, the way they're redefining the male and female relationships here. I mean, it's someone finally sat down and said, okay, let's think about this as adults. If this was real, how would this work? And what would this mean? And how do you throw a wrench in it? And I've got to say, I've been impressed with every issue as it comes out, and I'm really loving the series. So that's my pick of the week. I'm going with Transformers More Than Meets the Eye 28.
Nice. I'm glad to see, you know, the evolution, because it's obviously no longer, oh, here's a new character because we're about to, you know, release a new toy.
Right, right.
So that's nice to see.
Okay. My click of the week is Avengers number 28.
Yay!
Just for every single panel between Bruce Banner and Tony Stark. That was great. Drama.
Mm-hmm. Tension. Things moving forward. Things moving forward. Let me see. What am I going to make my click of the week? I think I'm going to semi-piggyback on Tim's click of the week, but and go with my original gut, which is Avengers 20, a combo of Avengers 28 and New Avengers number 17, because as you know, reading them in tandem moves the Avengers story as a whole, the Hickman Avengers story as a whole forward, and I enjoyed reading them both, and they were just very much. You know, the best reads that I had this week. So I definitely would make these my co-clicks of the week. All right.
And Roddy Cat, did he say what his was?
I believe so. I believe so.
Go look at the sheet.
Yep, I believe so. Let me scroll down and see.
There's a special shout out to Avengers AI for being wonderfully weird to the end. Oh, but the click of the week goes to Avengers Heroes Welcome number 1. What is that?
I didn't even read that.
Avengers Heroes Welcome?
Radicat, you have to explain to us on Twitter what that is.
You're going to force us to Google this. What the heck is he talking about?
Yeah.
Heroes Welcome. I see a 2013 series called Heroes Avengers Welcome.
I don't know if he means it's not there. Welcome. 2013 to present.
That's what's ongoing.
Okay. What on earth is this? What on earth is this?
So there you go.
Yeah, we're all like, what is this? We're looking it up now.
Like, what?
You're going to stump us, Roddy Cat.
Well, I mean, here's what I can find. Avengers Heroes Welcome, published September 16th, 2013. Added to Marvel Unlimited on September 26th. Avengers and Nova by the all-out star team of Brian Michael Bendis and Mark Brooks.
Mark Brooks, huh? Oh, wait, he said he put notes in a doc for it.
That's interesting.
Let me go up to his section. Okay, yeah. It was a... What? Can't read his...
Can't read his handwriting? His handwriting no, types?
Like, he has in parentheses TLDR. It was a... Then no parentheses. Oft times done but needed. Message wrapped in a story wrapped in a potential continuation of where Avengers Assemble could have headed. Sam... Sam doubts his calling and goes calling on the Avengers. Very conversation, such thought, no resolution. Not sure what all that means.
They're like, they're Sam. Like his notes, right? Those are his notes. It's like, yeah, I just think he's, I need to talk about this.
Yeah, I'm
sure Sam Alexander.
Like... Oh.
That's going to be Sam Alexander Nova.
Okay. He wasn't in Avengers Assemble, was he?
Sam doubts his calling and goes calling on the Avengers. Very conversation, such thought, no resolution.
Very full of conversation, maybe. Very conversational. Such and
so
is the, this Roddy Cat. That's all I got to say.
But so something that has to do with the animated universe that I don't watch.
Okay. Maybe.
All right, well, that's his click of the week. It's cool.
It says it was free on Comixology under new releases, so he grabbed it.
Ah, there we go.
So make sure to check it out on Comixology through the new Comixology Reader app. Make sure you go to the Comixology.com, buy it, and then download it or sync it to your Reader app.
Or you just get a Android or Windows 8 tablet, and then you just go bink, 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 and then you're done.
There you go.
I don't know anything about that.
Yeah, it's really easy. You just find the comic you want, and you click on it, and it buys it, and then it downloads it. You can read it.
And that's it.
Yeah, it's very handy. It's very nice.
Mm.
So, make sure to follow Roddy Cat on Twitter @RoddyCat and @NewsNerdsNeed. Follow Agent 70 @Agent_70. Follow Dirt @PCN_Dirt. And @popculturenetwork.com. And I'm @Tim DOGG98 and @TheClickNation. Hopefully I'll feel better for next week's episode.
Yes.
And remind everyone that we record live every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. So if you're online during that time period, tune into us. Give us a view. Give us nice iTunes and Stitcher reviews also.
You got
five stars. Help us move up the rankings.
Exactly, exactly. Oh, and by the way, Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was pretty good this week. I enjoyed it.
Yes, it was. Arrow was too.
There you go. We got our TV stuff in. Both Anyone shows here are... going... Oh, I'm sorry.
I just was going to say both shows are nearing their season ending.
Right, so things are ramping up. For the season finales and the inevitable cliffhangers that we're all going to get. Just very quickly, Free Comic Book Day is this weekend. Is there going to be a big sale at your shop, Dirt?
Except for pre-orders and held items, everything in the store will be 25% off. Plus, we're going to have Bruce Brown, a writer for Arcana Comics, who has done the Howard Lovecraft books. He's going to be there signing books. We're going to have Robert Atkins, who draws for IDW, does a lot of G.I. Joe, also did the Castle series for Marvel based off the TV show.
Nice.
He's going to be there doing sketches. His brother, Mike Atkins, I think is his name, is also going to be there, but I don't know what he does. It's like a last-minute thing. Hey, my brother's going to come. He also draws comics.
Sure. Cool. Nice.
We're going to have Brett Freeman there, who's a local guy, did his own self-published indie comic. He's going to be there signing stuff. We've got a pizza company that's going to be dropping off free pizzas at noon and 3 o'clock, so you can come by and get some pizzas. We're going to have some local DJs are going to be there playing live music. I think the Sangamon County Animal Protective League, whatever, is going to be there with dogs and cats.
Get out of here.
You can play with and adopt. They're going to be out there. Do Chili Parlor is going to have their food truck out there, so they're going to have their big van. You can go
nice.
Out and chili from then. So it's actually turning into a pretty big deal. Oh, IDW and Xenoscope have sent us some stuff to give away throughout the day.
Nice.
So we're handing those out. So, yeah, there's a lot of stuff. Excellent.
So we're inviting, you know, we were reminding everyone to hit up their comic book shops for free comic book day, not just to grab the free comic books, but to also contribute to all our small businesses that, you know, help us out and, you know, sell us our comics.
Let me throw something out there quick while we're talking about free comic book day before we go. I know that for a lot of people, the idea that you're going to go out and grab some free stuff is, you know, so exhilarating. And of course, I want you to buy something while you're there. But I just want to remind people that the comics that you're getting for free on Free Comic Book Day are not free for the stores. We actually have to buy the comics that you get for free. We have to pay for the shipping to have them shipped to the store so that you have them for free. So we've spent like $700 in free comics that we're going to be giving away on Free Comic Book Day. So kind of keep that in mind when you walk into a store, and if they've got a sign, you know, saying, please don't take duplicates, please only take five different titles, you know, something like, people get mad. Like, I wanted the whole set. Well, if you want the whole set, find a scalper on eBay. You can buy the whole set. But you
know, another store.
Yeah, when you're going to Free Comic Book Day, the books are free for you, but they're not free for us.
Right.
So if someone,
or give some money if you want so much free stuff.
Right. So it's like, don't get all mad that you can't.
Yeah, that's kind of
copies. I want a whole set for myself and a whole set for my buddy. You know,
that's pretty petty.
You know, because there are people that will do that.
Yeah, I know that. That's pretty. That doesn't sound. You know, that doesn't sound out of the realm of possibility, to put it that
way. Right. So just keep that in mind when you guys go to Free Comic Book Day. Don't be greedy.
Don't be greedy, but also, like I said, chip into the small, you know, to the comic book shops. It is not, you know, it's a rare thing. It's not, you know, New York has Midtown Comics. They have, you know, it's a chain. They actually have multiple branches, but most comic book shops are, you know, either mom and pops or one and dones or small, and definitely small businesses. So get out there, support your local comic book shop. I'm going to shout out my, you know, like kind of hole in the wall comic book shop that's still pretty good and is treating me very well, Carmine Street Comics in the Village in New York City. But I definitely also want to remind people that, yeah, you can still go to Forbidden Planet and the multiple branches of Midtown Comics and go there, but make sure you go and support your local comic book shop because, you know, they're the ones that keep this alive, you know.
Is Atomic still open?
Atomic.
Atomic Comics?
The name rings a bell. I may not have frequented it, you know, like Time Machine. Comics on 14th Street, West 14th Street, I think is still there, but I'm not 100% sure. Comic book shops, you know, some of the older ones have kind of gone the way of the dodo here in New York. And really because of the skyrocketing rents, some of the big ones are the ones that have kind of remained, you know, like Forbidden and Midtown. So, you know, even Hanley's universe, they actually became JHU and relocated, you know, in Midtown. And, you know, make sure to hit them up. They definitely are a well-run outfit. Anyone have plans to see – I know Dirt doesn't. Amazing Spidey 2. You knew that's where I was going as soon as I said that, right? Amazing Spidey 2. Anybody? Bueller?
I'll see it. Cricket? See it Saturday matinee.
Yeah, I'm probably going to catch it sometime over the weekend. I don't think I'm going to go out opening night. You know, that's tonight technically, but I don't think I'm going to make it tomorrow.
Yes, tonight.
I don't think I'm going to make it tomorrow. It's probably going to be at some point over the weekend. You know, I plan on watching it. Hopefully we can watch, talk about it next week, you know, on the show.
Cool.
All righty.
So with that, we will bring this episode to an end. I want to thank everyone who's tuned in live and for those watching the video podcast.
Yes, thank you all.
Also the audio version when it goes up online.
Yeah, thanks for tweeting in.
We'll be back next week. So make sure to use the Comic Book Chronicles hashtag. And we are the Comic Book Chronicles, and we are signing off.
Peace.